Oliver Nelson and his septet with Stolen Moments. This is from his 1961 album, Blues and the Abstract Truth. Nelson is on tenor sax. Eric Dolphy is on alto sax and flute. George Barrow on baritone sax. Bill Evans on piano. Paul Chambers on bass. Roy Haynes on drums. And Freddie Hubbard on trumpet. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And glad that you can hook up with me again today. It's been quite a week. And it promises to be more of the same, and perhaps even more and the same in this week and other weeks to come. Well, we're going to talk about a couple of things. One thing that I absolutely must talk about today, and I'd love to have your feedback on it, is what is happening today in Washington, D.C., as the U.S. Senate begins to consider a one-count article of impeachment that the House had voted out against ex-President Donald Trump last week. The House had charged Trump with inciting a violent insurrection by supporters, his supporters, on January the 6th in Washington, D.C., as you recall. He stoked the rebellion and the violence, the charging document said, by encouraging a mass rally in support of his claim that the
due to the violence that broke out around the Capitol that day, five people died. Several congressional offices were ransacked after leaders and their staffs ran for their lives, and damage to several buildings and the campus grounds was extensive. Now that the initial shock has worn off, new questions have surfaced in connection with the impeachment charge against Trump. So we'll be talking about some of those new questions. And, of course, we'd like to hear questions you have as well about this development. What are you thinking about this whole thing? It is so surreal to me. That the Senate is exploring the possibility that the one charge, this is a very interesting thing. There's only one charge that Trump is faced with by the House. The House makes a charge, and then the Senate puts the president on trial. So we're at the first stages of this. What do you think about the entire House? Because we talked about it a bit, but as we get a little deeper into it, let's start again at this beginning of the unusual nature of this charge, in that there's only one charge, and that charge is inciting a riot, essentially, that the president urged his supporters to rebel and to conduct a small campaign of terror localized in Washington, D.C. I'm very curious about your thoughts about that, the fact that there's only one charge, and today the Senate begins to explore the validity of the charge in terms of its legal grounds, whether it's on safe legal grounds to make this charge, and then they go from there. How do you feel about that? Because I would think, given what we saw, this was not just about the president allegedly inciting a riot and this violence. But there was so much more that happened that day that, to me, constituted or should have constituted a concern. It should have constituted, beyond a concern, a charge. This is, he's no ordinary person. He's a head of state of the United States. And the conduct, it seems to me, lent itself to far more serious charges. To come out of that so-called investigation by the House with one single charge, I don't understand it. Maybe you do. 888-874-4888. And then, mind you, again, as I said, the charge is meant now to trigger a new layer, another layer of legal action, which may or may not occur, with regard to Donald Trump. So I am puzzled as to why we are to believe or we are expected to accept this order of business. You know, a major event occurs. It was traumatic for the nation. It incurred a lot of damage and death. And the only charge that the House could come up with is inciting a riot. I'm having trouble with that. And that is the only charge. And based on this one charge, it would seem as if the Senate doesn't find any reason to go beyond it, well, that's the end of things. That's the end of it. Is this what we should expect from the highest offices in the land? 888-874-4888. Let's talk about that for a minute. I just don't get it. I don't get it at all. But maybe you have some insight that you could bring to this matter that helps us understand it a little more fully. Maybe there are things that we're just not getting. But this is according to the rules. This is the way it ought to go. The House undertakes the first leg of it to find out, in their view, whether this should go further into a trial and conviction, if you will. And that's the next leg of the race. But I don't get it. Do you? Do you understand that this is the American system of justice, and things are going according to the law? This is what is happening today. And based on the determination of the Senate, which is the only body that could actually convict a president, then it goes further. What further means, we don't know yet. But meaning that he will be convicted, or just like he was before. This is, of course, as you know, the second time this president has been brought up on charges in the capacity as president, but he remained there after the first impeachment. This is the second impeachment. Okay. So I await your calls at 888-874-4888. I also have another subject that we should talk about. But let's tackle this one first. Let's tackle this one first. 888-874-4888. What do you think, by just interpreting the chain of events leading up to today with the Senate considering whether to convict or to dismiss the charge against Donald Trump, what do you think we, the people, ought to interpret this as? What should we be thinking about it? In the meantime, I'm trying to fix something here, and I'm no good at... Oh, I see. It's working. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Eutrice. How you doing?
Okay, Ed. How's by you?
Well, you know, here, me and my thumb, as usual.
You and your thumbs. Yes,
trying to deal with. As usual, trying to deal with the chilliness of this weather. We're having a freak cold front here. My take on this whole thing with this fake impeachment, and I call it fake, and I'll tell you why. Because, number one, there were several charges that this individual could have been brought up on. Only one is ridiculous. He's already given himself an out, as far as technically speaking, because he never made any direct statement that incited a riot. So you're leaving a lot to interpretation, number one. Number two, they want to sweep him under the rug. They don't want to deal with him anymore as far as GOP or as far as any type of political presence. So at best we'll get out of this. He might be sanctioned, never allowed to run for office again, to sweep him under the rug and to try and just blot him out and move forward. But will he get the punishment that he deserves? No, I don't think so. He deserves jail time. He deserves to be ostracized from society. He's responsible for several hundreds, if not hundreds of thousands, of deaths. And he needs to be made accountable. And if he's really not made accountable, this, they're setting a benchmark for this government. And the next one that rolls along will be able to do more, and we'll expect less. This government is in a crisis, and how this individual is handled makes a direct statement on the moral and ethical and justice qualities of this government.
But did you expect that it would be so bold? I mean... To take such a position is one thing, but to be so bold about it, so open about it, so in our faces about it.
Well, I mean, it goes without saying. I mean, we've had examples of this before. George Bush was a war criminal, his father and son. Even Barack Obama, even though he was a smooth talker, he killed American civilians without trial, without court, with drone strikes. So, and let's not even talk about the Clintons and the myriad of crimes and skeletons that are in their closets. I mean, back from the days of Reagan and Iran-Contra, it's just the only thing about Trump, he's naked. He's wide open. And that's what disturbs a lot of people. But if you really look at the history of this country, how this country was founded and political events that have taken place through the hundreds of years this country has been around, this is nothing new. This is nothing new. It's just blatant, and everybody can see it. Due to the fact of COVID-19, locked everybody down, due to the fact that we have multiple media sources now. But it's blatant. This is status quo for this country, unfortunately.
Hmm. All right. Thank you so much for getting us started today. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Good afternoon, you Trace.
Good afternoon.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I am very disappointed that there's only one charge as well, but I think that when they did the charge, when they wrote it up, they wanted to write something as quickly as possible, and I think that's why it was only one charge. But I think that the charge also leaves openings for lots of other things to be brought in. And I also think, before I hear one more person tell me that Trump didn't directly instruct people to go to the Capitol and riot, that is how it was heard to his audience. And his audience is now speaking on that when they're trying to get out of their own charges of going to jail. So I think that the fact that they're actually saying that that's what they heard, that we can talk about inciting this, and I think it can be charged, and I think that a lot of the law depends on how you interpret the law. There's a lot of people that get off because of interpretations, and I'm kind of like tired of hearing people on the left. I am on the left, so I get tired of hearing my own people say it's impossible because he didn't directly say go to the Capitol and kill people. Give me a break, okay? People have been brought down for so much less than that. So I think it's up to the willingness of the Senate to prevail here. So either they have the willingness to indict him and convict him, and I think he should be convicted on so many more things. And I would really like to see him go to prison, because I think what he did was at the height of you know, breaking the law. It's so much deeper, and as time goes on, the more they unravel about this, the more you realize. I mean, it's truly a coup d'etat. It's so deep. It's absolutely still existent there. And I feel like if you don't cut the head of the snake off, I'm telling you, you're going to end up with a million other skirmishes, battles, other places that are going to be attacked. Because as I said last week, and I was pleased to see Jack Erasmus agreed with me, that they see this as a win. The people who did this see this as a win, because no one has really been punished. It was unbelievable to me that the woman who stole Nancy Pelosi's computer was instructed by a judge the other day that she should feel happy that the United States is a fair and just place. So he is letting her go home with her mom, and she can be taken. Her mother can be the caretaker or the overseer of her. In the meantime, Khalif Browder, which was brought up on TV last night, which was, I thought, a very good comparison here, was accused, never proven, but accused of taking a backpack, goes to Rikers Island for 3 years and is completely abused and destroyed by the system there, and comes out and commits suicide. Really? So this is really hard for people to take. And I think that the fact that you're starting to see stories like Khalif on CNBC that's a positive thing, because they're putting it out there more and more for people to see the glaring differences. But there must be a reason why they're doing this, and I don't trust the reason. And I also don't trust the people in the Senate to have good enough judgment to see that this can't just be passed on, passed over, and hope for the best. It's very, very deep, the coup d'etat. It's still there. The tentacles are still in there. And at the very least, it is certainly not good enough to me that all Trump, you know, can do is not run for office again. That is not good enough to me. To leave him out there and to say there is no repercussions, there is no kinds of consequences. To me, that a president of the United States who has performed a coup d'etat, it was unsuccessful, but that is what he did. And all of the other people that are with him, Charles Flynn, he's a part of this. He's a colonel. He's Michael Flynn's brother. He was a part of it when the people were calling up for the National Guard. Charles Flynn continued to tell them, you don't need it. You don't need them yet. I mean, give me a break. So I hope very, very much that the Senate does the right thing. And I hope that they can take that very, I think that the charge is very vague and big, hopefully for the reason that you can build into this charge all the other things that go along with an insurrection. So That's what my hope is for today.
So far, there's no indication of that. What does it say to you as a citizen?
As a citizen, it infuriates me. I can't even tell you how it infuriates me. It makes me feel despondent, and it infuriates me at the same time because I can't believe that something that's so huge, it is huge what they did, is going to just be, swept under the rug. Let's pretend it didn't happen, and let's move forward. I think you can't move forward without acknowledging what happened first. You cannot move forward unless you acknowledge what happened. And this is so symptomatic of all kinds of behavior in our country. And it truly goes to show that from the very, very top level on down, this country's, moral values have just, I don't really have moral values. I don't know. We don't make anybody responsible for anything unless you're innocent of doing something. And then we get in there and we shoot you to death. I mean, so I think it's very, very upsetting. And I think that the people that are in power are counting on the left to sit back and take it all in stride, not to protest this, just to go along with it. And I hope that if this comes to nothing, that we should be out in the streets demanding that there is justice and demanding that he be put in jail.
What does it say to you about your continued faith in the system?
Well, I think that I don't have faith in the system as it is right now. So, and I think what it says to me is that the faith that I do have, I have faith in the Constitution. I have faith in the high ideals that brought those thoughts together and put them on paper. But I don't have faith that those values are being executed anymore. And I think that we're at a really dangerous crossroads when we don't act on this. And I don't even know what to say. It makes me furious. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to this week that have said exactly the same thing as I have. They can't believe it. They can't believe that there's not going to be any kind of consequence. And I'm telling you, it's just as dangerous to leave people like myself out there. I won't say dangerous, but I mean, thought-wise, you don't want to have people having this kind of opinion of the government. Okay. It leaves people feeling really cynical. It makes them feel frightened because it feels like we have no government then. If there's no consequences to this, then there really isn't a government either. There's nobody in charge. And, it makes me feel very angry and very despondent. And I think it makes many, many other people feel the same way. I think for the sake of this country, they better do something. They better make us whole by attaching consequences to this kind of horrific behavior. And if they don't, then I think they're going to lose on both sides. They're going to lose those Trump followers that they thought they could count on, and they're going to lose people like me on the left.
Thank you. Thanks very much
for
your very thoughtful contribution today. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
Hi, Trees. I just wanted
Hello.
To comment on... Oh?
Yes, I'm listening.
Okay, I thought you said oh. I would just want to comment on what I would call our selective outrage. I mean, as far as I could see, every president in my lifetime has just been involved in atrocious war crimes and has basically functioned as an instrument of oligarchy and an enemy of the people, throughout my lifetime, certainly. And I think, throughout most of history, I don't really recall the powerful in general at any point being, not corrupt. And I just find it interesting. I mean, Trump is just a despicable, odious person. I have nothing to say in his defense, and whatever punishment could be inflicted on him, I think that would be great, although I doubt anything will based on precedent set by events such as Iran-Contra. But I just don't understand why we're so offended by some things and just not offended by things like Barack Obama's authorizing the invasion of Libya or his drone strikes or George W. Bush starting two full-scale wars and committing acts of genocidal proportion. It's like, it seems to me like Trump's outrageous remarks, which were outrageous and offensive, got more outrage than actual atrocities inflicted on vast populations. So, you know, I just find it interesting. It's like Donald Trump was a terrible president, but Barack Obama was a good president, bombing Libya and you know, any number of atrocities and crimes against humanity that we could outline and delineate. So, you know, and I also would like to add that Donald Trump, as contemptible as he is, again, what a wannabe dictator. I mean, the fact of the matter is, those people were vandals. And, you know, things got out of hand and people got killed. I think some people were killed because of police violence, actually, which wasn't really reported. You know, if they were real militia people, there are organized militias in this country. And if they wanted to go and perhaps execute any number of Congress people or government workers, they could have done so. But lucky for us, you know, he didn't have that kind of really serious militant on the ground organization ready to move. The people who vandalized the place, expressing outrage, disgruntled citizens, disgruntled, disqualified consumers, may have lost their jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of outrage was expressed, but, you know, not a very organized, serious thing in terms of, you know, just, and I don't mean serious in terms of the consequences. I mean serious in terms of the level of organizing and militancy, et cetera. So I think, you know, people are kind of, you know, they like to say that, you know, this was a coup and whatnot, but pretty sloppy coup. And, you know, I recall, who was it? Which state was it where Donald Trump was pleading, I think with the Georgian, you know, head of elections, who was saying, please, can't we just find, you know, 11,000 votes here or there? Again, I say pretty weak dictator begging and groveling someone, you know, to someone beneath him in the hierarchy. And that getting exposed on television and him looking stupid. So, you know, I think he's fascistic in his spirit, but he's not a disciplined fascist, thankfully for us.
He's not a disciplined fascist. All right. Thank you very much for contributing. Patricia from New York, you're on the air. How are you?
Good afternoon, you Trees, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I am well,
Thank you.
Hope you are also.
Yeah, we're hanging in here.
We are hanging in. You know, you Trees, I don't think that any one of us should be surprised at the way this is going, this is proceeding at the moment. This almost has a truth and reconciliation feeling, a South African style, when no one went to jail for the atrocities that occurred under the regime, the apartheid regime in South Africa. No one is serious about this. And the more you listen, if you're to believe what you hear on the news, the more you listen. You know, this morning I heard that they are now attempting to decide. There's in the Justice Department, there is controversy between two camps. Should we proceed to prosecute all of the individuals, or should we not? Do we want to fill, you know, clog the courts with all of these 800 or so individuals who've been identified so far, or not? You know, this is absolutely absurd. Not only should Trump be charged with inciting a riot, when you incite a riot, there's also conspiracy involved. If people are injured or hurt or die, anybody else is always charged. You know, you hear about if you participate in something, and even if you didn't intend, if the end result is death, then you are charged also with that death. It just boggles.
I'm hearing you.
It boggles the mind
for the words. Yes.
So I think I would have to agree with all of the other individuals who've already commented. This really, this, This is pro forma. They're going through the ritual, but nobody's really serious about this. This is pro forma for the public. And, I mean, already so what, you hear the so Republicans. You know, the most absurd thing I heard was Kevin McCarthy saying that everybody is responsible, not just Trump, not just the Republicans, but Democrats. Everybody should be. I mean, how absurd is that?
Well, it is very absurd. But let us ask this question. Did you expect that it would be so in your face? What is it that, because if this were to happen, let's say 10 years ago, there would be a great amount of embarrassment that something so obvious in intent is so obvious. People would try to find a way to explain it differently. But the brazenness of it, what does that say to you?
Well, I don't know. I think I'm going to have to disagree with you, my sister. I don't know that it would have been explained away. Well, it would have been explained away. It would have been more subtle, and the message certainly would have been crafted so there would not be any opposition or any question. But I don't think anything, the end result would have been the same. Let's face it, the system is designed to continue, to protect itself, to survive. So whatever you have to do to make certain that the system survives is what you do. 10 years ago, the system would have wanted to survive. So it would have. It would have just been more creative.
Well, you have perhaps unwittingly supplied a perfect segue for the second part of this program today. Thank you so much for calling and contributing. Always you offer something for us to think about. Thank you. And what I was referring to was is a report that I read. I forget what is the source of it. But it talked about the fact that Donald Trump's administration is so corrupt. Well, we suspected that. But that even now, as he faces impeachment and so forth, there are literally hundreds of people we have not seen, we've not heard from, who are deeply entrenched and ensconced in the bowels of government in very high-paying jobs, and they're making all kinds of decisions. So that even if he goes via the route of impeachment, there is a permanent system installed of people who have come through his program of continued survival. His program of continued survival says, I'll search out people who have particular skills, and I'll insert them here and there, in this agency and that agency, all federal agencies, because he's the highest federal officer, as it were. So this, it's just not ending. And I find it very hard to believe that no one was paying attention to the fact that this is how Donald Trump has been operating. Whatever happens to him, he figures, I can deal with that. But whether I stay or whether I go, I have my permanent system implanted in the current government, the structure. I don't have to spend a penny to hire them to do my personal private bidding. They will do it because in one instance, they reported that a person already making $160,000 a year got a $10,000 a year raise. And this was typical. These people that Trump sought out and captured for future use or continued use to him in his various business and personal endeavors literally have been subsidized by the public. Unwittingly, we have no knowledge that that's what we're doing. We did have a hint of it when Trump hired his children in these jobs, Ivanka Trump as a senior advisor based on what education or what experience? None. Jared Kushner, her husband, same thing. Donald Trump Jr. and his girlfriend, same thing. Eric Trump, and so forth. So this raises another question. And I am saying, how come we don't have an investigation on this? All these millions of dollars, this is theft of services, really, theft of the people's money. And you give it to people you see will be great for your future endeavor, your business endeavors. They will help you avoid the law. They will help you fight the law, as a matter of fact. They will help you in your plans. They will cover for you. They will do your bidding. So you'll be president just the same. It doesn't matter. You may not have a title. You may not be public about it. But in fact, you will retain the same benefits, because these people, and the article said there was an estimated more than 100 of them, these people who were operating at a high level within the government have been wrested away and are going to be plugged into Trump's post-presidential life. And seeing to the growth of his business, how the government will be subsidizing through various ways his business, how he will be making a lot of money. And I said to myself, this just never ends. It just doesn't end. The average person caught doing something trivial, maybe not even legal, but not so serious as to warrant a trial or anything like that, but they will descend, the system will descend on such a person and destroy that person. Here we have a president of the United States. But you see, this is the Donald Trump. Many people in New York City, we know this Trump. We know that guy, the guy who would do that as a matter of course, and his whole family. Nobody has yet insisted on a hearing to hire his daughter or his sons or his son-in-law to go represent the United States in international arenas. We know it's business. This is not about international treaties. This is about business and how to make money. And they're protected. They're doing this right in the open. What are your thoughts about that? Could something be done about that? Is it too late? Do we care? Or do we just throw up our hands and walk away and say, you know, this guy is just way too much. He's breathing too much of our oxygen. So let him go and let's try to see what we can salvage from the situation. But an utterly and totally corrupt administration, the likes of which we have not seen in a long time. He just recently handed out pardons to people who are total criminals. he pardoned them because they were his buddies and pals, and he feels he owes some kind of a debt to them for standing with him during difficult times. Whatever it is the people who are subsidizing this reckless criminal behavior. What do you think about that? What do you think about a country that allows a president to do these things and get away with it, and it's right in our face? Lee from New York, you're on the air.
I think that Nancy Pelosi and gang have no intention of impeaching Donald Trump. They didn't have an intention the first time. That was not the intention this time. Donald Trump could probably get off just by saying he plead the influenza defense and get off. You know, this is, I'm not surprised one bit. Not one bit. It's business as usual. I don't expect anything to change.
What does that leave you with? Or does that leave you as politically? What are you going to become after this particular experience in your face?
Well, quite frankly, I've come to the realization a long time ago that we live in a one-party system, and one party can't throw dirt on the other one because their dirt may be just slightly less stink, but both of them have dirt, and the other party would just throw the dirt right back on them. So if you convict him, it's like convicting yourself. You're just as guilty as he. There is no difference.
At some point, though, don't you almost want to have a major upheaval in this country over things like this?
Well, quite frankly, Utrice, I don't think I'll see anything like that in my lifetime.
Hmm. Oh, boy. Well, thank you. Thanks for contributing today. Thank you. Randy from New Jersey, what do you say?
Hi, Utrice. How are you?
Hello.
To the family.
Thank you.
Well, there's a couple of thoughts. One, and I agree with Lee, I doubt very seriously that they're going to do anything about Trump. This is just a continuation of Kabuki theater. But this theater started a long time ago. And I think the dress rehearsal started with the Iran-Contra scandal when nobody took the Reagan administration to task for bringing drugs into America and destabilizing the communities of color in order to fund an illegal war, and that Oliver North can sit there and plead the fifth for, I forgot how long he did that, for several hours and possibly even several days, and no one actually was held accountable for that action, that criminal action. And I figured that the powers that be figured if they can get away with that at that time, it just kept the ball rolling for additional administrations that came behind it to not be held accountable to their illegal activities because the public has been lulled to sleep and basically has been neutered to take any action against criminal behavior by their elected officials. So that continued on with the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, and the Obama administration, and now the Trump administration. So this is just, I guess, the little shop of horrors had a plant that started out real small, and it said, feed me, so I gave a little drop of blood. Then eventually it became a huge monster, and you had defeated bodies continually. Well, that's exactly what this administration is. It's like Audrey from the Little Shop of Horrors, and Trump is Audrey that broke out of the actual botanical storefront that the plant was housed in. And so we were able to take account of the fact that we have allowed this to occur, and that we are not just going to allow this to continue. We have to go to the polls. And if you think that's one way to handle it, but I think the more important way to handle it is to deal with it economically by not giving our money to corporations that end up buying our politicians, who end up doing things to further their ends and go against the self-interest of the masses of working people who are out here suffering right now.
But it seems, I hear you, I agree with you, but it seems as if it becomes a futile effort only because the people don't have nearly the kind of money that it takes to implement these surreptitious policies and ideas that just the same become effective and lawful.
Yes, but see, it's. I think there's two ways to look at it. One, there's the micro aspect of it where an individual doesn't have enough, but collectively we represent the wealth of the planet. When you have a million people putting together $10, that all of a sudden translates into $10 million. And that's one of the strategies that Bernie Sanders represented when he took small donations. So if we collectively pool our resources and channel them into entities that will be able to further serve the public interest and go away from this political hegemony that is dominating, you know, the discourse and the political narrative now and channeling our thought to just see things in one way or another, but there are other possibilities that don't get on the look at Jill Stein and her candidacy. She was very, very progressive, but she wasn't even given an opportunity to be on the platform. Bernie Sanders was trying to speak the same language as Jill, but he was thwarted during Hillary's campaign and was also thwarted again this time around because he represented so-called radical thought, and the corporate Democrats and the so-called progressive left wing didn't want to actually have that policy out there because they didn't think that that would defeat the Trump ticket. But it's not just about the politics. The politics is what is being played out in front of us. And like you said, it's right in our face. But what's really in our face is the fact that we're being manipulated to think that political solutions are the only things that are out here that we can exercise our power. Our power starts with how we spend our money. And if we are able to redirect how we spend our money and creating our own entities, worker-owned cooperatives, the things that are going to help facilitate taking care of the human family in terms of our basic needs, then that changes the direction of the political discourse, and then we can then put forth candidates and progressive policies that will redirect this energy so that we're not so frustrated and then self-implode because we're so angry about the things that we can't get done that we either become complacent or we fight with each other.
But by then, the system would still have control, utter and complete control, like it's done under Trump so far. He has created an entire system that accounts for the employment of people at very high salaries, which buys him their loyalty. He's able to get around the laws because he's operating from the inside, and they know how to move. They know what's coming. They know how to thwart it. So it becomes a futile effort to fight. And you just let these scoundrels take their turn at making, you know, whatever they want out of the system, all the while we are thinking that we have some measure of checks and balances.
And I agree with that. But I guess one counter to that would be, let's say we did have an advocate, a public advocate like a Ralph Nader, that was able to say, we're going to take these people to task. He would do it without being beholden to these power structures that allow a Trump and their ilk to continue to manifest this fantasy that we really have some control, but we can actually exert some control and some accountability and some consequences that would then send a different message and a different tone to the establishment and bureaucrats that are continuing to maintain this charade of democracy that we have. We need people who represent the people's will to be in positions of authority to hold accountability to those people when they do these kinds of acts of malfeasance.
As you heard yourself saying all of this, do you believe yourself?
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that in the span of a very short time, that people will wake up and begin to create alternatives. Because if we don't, then things are going to seriously get worse, and we'll be in a position where we really, the only action we'll be able to take will be very detrimental, because we'll just be out in the streets complaining and yelling, and they'll just basically corral us and put us off into these camps, and we will just be fodder. So I hope that it doesn't get to that point. I hope that we can actually do some things now to exercise the strategy and political will that I'm advancing here. But I do think it's going to take effort, it's going to take sacrifice, and it's going to take a willingness to not just allow things to go on as they've been going, but we actually do things that actually put forth the public will and push back against this sedative that they're trying to run down our throats.
Thank you very much for your contribution today. I enjoyed listening to your reasoning. Thank you.
Thank you, Trice.
Thank you. Leona from Michigan, you're here.
And greetings to your audience.
Thank you.
Yeah, at this point, I don't think I have much, if anything, to add. However, the thing about the impeachment of Trump and the thing about the Trump machine that's now installed, I guess, in the levers or the mechanisms of government, I'm reminded of how I think political parties probably, I don't know, maybe they were the first out the gate to try to, you know, take control of the levers of government and powers or what have you. And to my mind, what you just described about Trump having people in place at different, you know, positions, it sounds like a miniature political party, maybe. And that term deep state comes to mind. But I had a few questions. You know, I'm back to the events of January 6, 2021, and the five people who died as a result of those events. I wonder what the family of those people, those five people, what their family members would like to see happen in terms of Donald Trump. And also, I was also wondering if other speakers like Rudolph Giuliani and Donald Trump Jr., if they were going to be perhaps charged with inciting a riot as well.
Well, they have some new cases that have come up, and they will have a lot of accounting to do. One of them is an effort to saddle Giuliani as an advisor to Trump with the responsibility of paying in restitution more than $1 billion. We'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The other thing about that impeachment thing is that I think it takes 2/3 of the Senate to vote. So I think that's they're going to need at least over 66 votes, I guess, in order for a conviction to stick or take place, kind of deal. But I agree with I think it was Patricia. Yeah, this is kind of pro forma too. This process. That's my suspicion as well. And That's pretty much all I had, Eutrice.
Does it do anything to you? Does it cause you to grieve? I hate to use the word, but does it cause you to grieve that the American ideal has come to this and still people are getting away with it?
A while ago. However, yes, it watching this makes me feel overwhelmed. And yes, there is some grief. There is some grief. And I think the other caller was, you know, right. I'm not putting words in his mouth, but this thing of being conditioned to feel powerless and the constant distractions as well. And, I feel overwhelmed at times. And the grief about this system started a long, long, long time ago.
So that means we've got to go. The program has come to an end. We've run out of time. Let's get together again tomorrow and continue or talk about something. Thanks so much for listening today and for contributing. Bye-bye.